America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, and I have on the line with me...
Garland Nixon.
Hello, Garland Nixon. How are you, sir?
I am fantastic.
And today, surprisingly, Terry is a bit slow, but I assume he will call in any moment. We have lots to talk about. I want to talk about Megyn Kelly's incredible claim, and really divisive claim on Fox News, that Santa was white and Jesus was white. Really remarkable stuff. I'm going to be playing it on the air, and then we're going to talk about it. And I know that Terry, when he gets here, wants to talk about the one-year anniversary of the horrific Newtown shooting in Connecticut. And then, Garland, you want to talk about...
The budget deal.
The budget deal. Are you happy about it? I mean, the first deal ever? Or is it too small stuff for you? How do you feel about it?
It's a terrible deal, I think, for a number of reasons.
Oops. I think in picking up your phone, I hung up on Garland. Hello, Terry.
Oh, that's okay, Garland. That's
all right. Garland's going to have to call back. You know, you put me behind the boards here at We Act Radio, and stranger things have done to happen.
Where is good union help?
At least I picked you up, but I lost Garland in the process. So
intellectual advance.
So we're going to get to Garland's topic, by the way, is the budget agreement. Terry, your topic is Newtown. What do you want to talk about 1 year after Newtown?
Oh, my heavens. I mean, it's just, you know, it's so easy to forget these things and put them aside. And that is so wrong, because then we're talking about a real cultural disaster in this country. And I think what's really, besides Newtown, is this man Westbrook in Georgia that was shot.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're aware of the 72-year-old man with Alzheimer's who was also mute because of the Alzheimer's, and this moron in Georgia with stand your ground laws. After 10 minutes of the man sort of wandering around, you know.
Hello,
I got you both now.
Yeah,
I have you both now. I apologize, Garland. In reaching for Terry, I lost you. So,
I'm crushed that I was cast aside when Terry was available.
You were, but I assuredly, I would never do that intentionally. It was only accidental that anything like that would happen.
Well, you know, come on, fess up. I'm paying you a little bit for that.
You weren't supposed to acknowledge that on the air, Terry.
Sorry, that
really, I think that ruins our agreement.
No, it doesn't.
So, anyway, lots to talk about. So, because I dropped off Garland, Terry, you were telling me about what you wanted to talk. We'll start with Terry's topic, the anniversary of Newtown. Go ahead, Terry.
Well, the anniversary of Newtown, and again, sort of, you know, as I was talking about this man, Westbrook, that was shot in Georgia, and the... stand your ground, stupid laws and stupid people. This guy, 36 years old, comes up on a 72-year-old man and is, you know, threatened by him. I mean, give me a freaking break.
Yeah, I didn't read what happened in Georgia. What, did this happen on the street? Did this happen
no,
in...
No. This is, I mean, this man has Alzheimer's. He, for some reason or other, in the late night, probably around midnight, a little later, and after that, decides to go out and walk his dogs. It's below freezing. He's 72 years old. He has Alzheimer's. He's out walking two dogs. He gets lost. He goes towards a neighborhood that he used to live in and winds up at this guy's house sometime around 4 a.m. He's been out wandering about 3 hours now. He's 72 years old. He's an ex-Air Force veteran, et cetera, an engineer that worked, I think, for TVA, something like that. And he, you know, either thinks he's home or he needs help. Nobody knows which, but by this time he's suffering from the cold as well because he wasn't dressed very heavily. So he does what, you know, you used to be able to do in America. You could go and ask your neighbor for help.
Yeah, you knock on the door and say, hey, yeah, could I?
Yeah, right.
Could you help me? This is what happened to the woman, was it in Detroit, I think, who had an accident and looked for help and got shot.
North Carolina also.
All right, anyway, tell us what happened to this guy in Georgia.
Well, then he goes up and, you know, he rings the doorbell. And, you know, so it's not really clear exactly what happens, but approximately 10 minutes goes by. Nobody answers the door. He knocks. He tries to jiggle the doorknob, whether he thinks he's at home or whatever. And finally, the owner comes out, 36-year-old man. They've called 911, but he comes outside with his handgun, of course, being a good American boy, and sees this 72-year-old man and supposedly gives him some, quote, commands, whatever the heck that means. And whether or not the old man could understand him or hear him or anything else. So he fires four shots and kills him. And, you know, I mean, it's sort of like, wow, that's just what we do in America.
You know, if someone knocks on your door and you don't want to answer, I think you should be neighborly and answer your door, because I think the vast majority of people who knock on your door are not trying to kill you. But if you don't want to answer your door, don't bring out a handgun and shoot the person. Just don't answer your friggin' door, okay,
yeah.
America?
I mean, it's not rocket science. The other thing I think is significant, you know, and I'm not criticizing you guys, but, you know, since you weren't quite aware of it, you know, this is a white man shooting a white man.
Mm-hmm.
And so we make nothing of that. If a white man shoots a black one, it becomes a big issue, you know. And
to me, the issue is guns.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, they're too easy to get, and people are too trigger happy with them.
Yeah, well, and the other part of it is this. Yeah, the second part of what you said too. Not just the guns, but we've got a lot of people, I believe, in this country. If you look at the some of the comments on the internet, if you listen to what some people call in on some of these radio shows or C-SPAN in the morning, there are a lot of people who are basically walking around looking for an excuse to shoot someone.
Why,
who
sure,
see shooting,
man.
They see shooting someone as a way, as the ultimate way to exercise their Second Amendment right. I had a reason to shoot someone, and I did it, and that makes me a heroic American.
Well, Garland, in their defense, they just spent hundreds of dollars, maybe thousands, on a new gun and plenty of shiny new bullets that they got at Walmart. And, I mean, what, how, you gonna buy something, and then your wife's gonna say, you know, honey, that was a waste of your money. You're like, no, I used what I bought.
You ever heard the old, remember the old song, if you can't be with the ones you love the one you with? Well, if you can't find a criminal to shoot, you gotta shoot somebody.
You gotta
shoot somebody. Like I said,
shoot an old Alzheimer's patient. If that's the best you can get and you want to shoot somebody, hey, you know?
You did spend a lot of money on a gun. I mean, so.
And, you know, speaking of that, and, you know, I mean, it has gone so far with the mass shootings in Newtown, and we sort of think, you know, well, okay, we'll improve the security at the schoolyards. Well, we'll improve the security in the shopping malls. I mean, none of this is going to stop the mass shootings from happening. They will happen again. They will continue to happen. They will happen in churches, which they've already done. They will happen in schools.
Yeah.
Pretty soon, they'll be happening in, well, they happen in businesses.
They have happened everywhere.
Yeah, they have.
And you can't protect everywhere. You can't have, you can armed guards in schools, but in, you can't have them on, I mean, what, school, every street? I mean, cops can't be everywhere. Every school, every street, every home. I mean,
the truth is, Mark, not only can you not protect everywhere, you can't protect anywhere. Because if somebody has a gun, you know, a Bushmaster, whatever, whoever you put there, A, they're going to have superior firepower, and B, they're going to have the jump on the person. So when they walk up and start firing, I don't care if you've got five armed police officers there. If somebody walks up with a Bushmaster, it takes about, 5 seconds to shoot them all.
Yeah. Yeah, the element of surprise, obviously.
You know, somehow, it was brought up a little bit when Newtown happened, you know, that this is a cultural issue, and even the NRA sort of talked about that, but that they used it for an excuse. But it is a cultural issue. There's nothing that's going to happen legally that's going to change the availability of guns. It's just not going to happen in this screwed up country.
Well, it's not that it couldn't happen. You may be right that it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Right?
But you know, I like to think, and again, I'm maybe the silly optimist here always, but I like to think that Newtown and Trayvon Martin and what happened in Detroit and Georgia and North Carolina, that maybe a little bit of the sheen has come off the National Rifle Association. And I realize, you know, that we didn't do anything after Newtown, and President Obama tried and Vice President Biden tried and so forth. But again, I'm always trying to look for the bright side. And right here in the state of Virginia, we had an election where, and Virginia is no blue state. It's a solid purple state. It's right in the middle. But we had an election where the Democratic candidate, Terry McAuliffe, they told him at a debate that he had an F rating with the National Rifle Association, the worst possible rating. And he said, I don't care what the NRA rates me. In Virginia, you know, a state that still is largely southern, except for the areas around the D.C. suburbs where I live. So I'd like to think that this can still change. I don't want to give up hope on gun legislation. And I would suggest to you that even if it can't happen federally, it could still happen in state governments. And it is happening in a few state governments across the country.
But, you know, I mean, I am glad to hear that McAuliffe said that, you know, and I admire him for doing that. Maybe some other politicians will get find out where their balls are. And I'm not meaning to exclude female politicians, of course, by that.
Some of them have got some really large cojones.
Never mind.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, never mind. But, you know, and when we live in a society where, in fact, you know, most of the shootings are in this age range, I mean, be it gangs or whatever, in the age range from about 17 to about 26, 20, something like that.
Young men, they're dangerous. If we just got rid of young men.
A whole lot of testosterone and no brains. And you also live in a society where the number one buyer of all of the video games, the super violent video games, are in the same
age. I don't buy the connection, Terry. I don't think that's fair. There's 99% of people who play violent video games don't go out and shoot anybody.
It's a culture. It's a culture that says it's okay. That's what the culture says. They don't go out and shoot anybody. Sure, who cares? The point is the culture says it's okay. This is what we do. This is who we are. The same thing is true in entertainment. It's the same demographic group of people that are attracted to these things.
But you're not going to stop Hollywood from doing violent films.
The question goes there, Mark, too, is this, what Terry said, because I think we can say that this violent films is, you know, I don't know, we can't say how much a contributing factor. It could be, you know, 0.001%, I don't know, or it could be 21%, but I think it's a contributing factor. But the question becomes with the violent video games also this. Are they a contributing factor in that they make people more likely to do it, or do they represent the culture? People have an appetite for them because of the violent and brutal nature of our, you know what I mean?
Chicken and egg. But I've actually seen a study on violent video games, and it turns out that there are two countries where young men play violent video games more as a per capita basis than in America. And those two countries are the Netherlands and Japan, both of which have very strict gun laws, and neither of which have 1/100 of the gun crime that we have in the United States of America. So
let's face it, they're behind the curve.
Gun laws.
I'm serious. You know, the entire culture of this country has been that it is your right to shoot people. So that is our culture. Now, the Netherlands, I know that's not their culture. Japan's another issue. And besides that, it's not just a question of having the guns. It's the question of the rest of the public, you and me, the rest of the public, looking at something as horrible as Newtown, sending their $50 to some charity and saying, it's okay, it's America. And that's really what's being said.
See, I think
the violence.
I think we've got to hit this politically. I really think that the answer is the gun laws. And yes, I know the National Rifle Association is the most powerful lobby in the United States of America. But, you know, I believe in fighting the power. And, you know, we can do these things at the state level. I do think after Newtown, the NRA isn't quite as strong. I mean, even gun owners, even NRA members support background checks for the type of criminally insane person that murdered those children at Newtown.
Getting any kind of gun they want.
Yeah, let me say this, and this may shock you, but I think both of you guys are right. How many times?
Oh my goodness!
Wow! This only happens once a year. It is Christmas time, friends.
Generally, I think you're both wrong. Terry is right in that there's a culture of violence, there are a lot of things in here that a lot of things we see that demonstrate Americans' propensity toward indiscriminate violence. However, you know, we used to have a scene, I was in law enforcement and I had all kinds of people that worked under me. And I used to say, I cannot control your beliefs, nor do I want to. You can go home and be a member of the KKK, you can be an anti-feminist, you can be an anti-Semitic, you can be anything you want at home. That's your right. But what we can control is your behavior. If you do this on the job, you're going to get fired. If you act like this or say this, you're going to get fired. Your behavior. So in what Terry's saying, I agree with, because, yes, there's this propensity towards violence. But what Mark is saying is we can't stop people from wanting to be violent, but we can make sure they can't get guns and they can't be violent. So I'm with Mark. While the reality is there, the only way that we can actually physically make a difference and make a change and address that issue is to make sure that the person who wants to shoot somebody, who is mentally ill, who is angry, violent, or whatever, racist, anti-Semitic, whatever it may be, you know, bipolar, you name it, can't get their hand on the weapon so they can't kill a bunch of people.
You know, there's
even out that one simple fact. I mean, you look again at the civil rights movements, which is probably about the only thing we can look at this country and try to understand this country, you know, because it reflects in so many ways. And what really happened there, what happened to a large degree there, was not political in the beginning at all. It was cultural. It became somewhat cultural in the Civil War. It became a little bit more cultural in World War II, when the African Americans, you know, were in the armed forces and accepted for the most part in the armed forces. But what really happened with Martin Luther King and everybody else is they changed the frigging culture of the United States of America.
I think
they changed the culture, the politicians had to respond.
I think it was chicken and egg. I disagree with you, Terry. I think they changed the politics first.
Chicken and egg.
No, here's the point. I think if you look at white attitudes in the 1950s and the 1960s, particularly in the South, although it was also outside the South, you will find lots of very racist, very segregationist attitudes. When they succeeded integrating the schools, there's lots and lots of angry white people. I actually think Martin Luther King changed the culture. The culture didn't. It's because of the nonviolence of the protesters. It's because of the fact that, you know, children were getting water hosed in Selma, Alabama. It's because people's conscience was awakened by the response of the authorities to the civil rights movement. I think that, but I don't think culture changed first in that circumstance. I really don't. I think civil rights movement changed the culture, which then reinforced the civil rights movement.
Yeah, Martin Luther King did change the culture. The other thing that changed the culture is the media's approach was totally different than it is today. The media approach showed the reality of what the heck was happening in the South. The media today simply just washes over everything and makes it
entertaining. Well, Terry, let me ask you a question, a very honest question. Should the media have shown a mass of bodies? There's a pile of 26-year-olds shot and bleeding and dead and dying. Should they have shown that pile on the news? Maybe they should have. Maybe that would reawaken our gun laws, as awful as that is.
Besides the age difference and the generational difference, which I was part of, thank you, what changed things in Vietnam or anything else is the news media was not prevented from showing everything. And they showed what was happening in Vietnam.
Garland, should we show a pile of dead 6-year-olds? A dead shot 6-year-old?
You guys make a strong argument for that. And let me tell you why. I'll take a little different tack on the civil rights movement and how that affects today, what we should do and what changes things. I would argue that even today there are parts of this country, let's face it, I wouldn't feel very, very comfortable driving through rural Mississippi with Paris Hilton in the car and a Subaru and an I Love Obama bumper sticker. I don't think I'd make it out real
Evans,
well.
No, me neither.
Me neither, by the way.
Now, right, yeah. The Obama, I Love Obama bumper sticker.
That's enough to get you shot, right?
Yeah. And then you throw in me, a black guy with a blonde hair, white, I mean, it's just over.
Yeah.
But at any rate.
Well, plus, anyone would want to shoot Paris Hilton, but that's a different story.
Here's what I say. What happened was there were the majority of the people in this country weren't on board with the extremely racist culture that was going on in the Deep South. When it was exposed to the majority of Americans, remember, Martin Luther King said it's this vast group of people in the middle who are kind of apathetic that really creates the problem.
That's right.
Once this was exposed to all of the Americans, all Americans looked at it and said, you know, we may be kind of okay with some things, but hey, this is unconscionable. Things have to be changed.
So by that logic,
exactly.
As horrible as it would be to the families who suffered, maybe their greatest contribution would be to show a writhing mass of dead and dying 6-year-olds having been shot mercilessly by this insane fellow.
It's only one exception, and this scares me, frankly. I mean, I think it might have an effect, and I think it might be good, and I wish the media were a little more honest instead of just overdramatic. They would overplay it here so many times that it would become meaningless. The difference was back then in Vietnam, you had three networks, you can't go back to that, and those basic three networks had independent news agencies, we can't go back to that, and each one of them had separate segments and separate coverage of the Vietnam War by specific individuals who were there showing us what happened. And it was contained and it was controlled in the sense it wasn't just blood and guts, but it was a very broad, huge perspective of what really is going on here. Today, any crisis that happened, whether they show the children or not, it would be on every single channel for 68 hours straight, repeating the same stupid story over and over
and over. But you know what? I think, and I hadn't really thought about this until this came up organically in our discussion today, but I actually think they should show the massive children. You know, I'm not old enough to remember Vietnam, but I am old enough to know that there was a famous Life magazine photo of a naked woman running away. I don't know if it was from a napalm attack or...
Yes, right.
A Vietnamese woman and crying and screaming, and that it's a very famous life photo. I think that the guy won a Pulitzer or something. But that photo probably did more to turn Americans' minds against the Vietnam War than knowledge that, you know, tens of thousands of people have been killed.
You bring up a huge cultural point, and this is maybe why it's not quite possible to do these things today, and I don't know what the heck will. What you had back then is you did have a lot of still photos, and still photos have more power than any movie, because a movie is action-oriented, period.
Well, you could have a still photo of a bunch of dead first graders.
You should.
Well, the other part...
I mean, Abu Ghraib was still photos, and they were pretty powerful.
Yeah. Still photos make a difference emotionally.
Go ahead, Gon.
Film doesn't, necessarily.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we're all on the right track, and I think what we're talking about is exposing. But here's the other problem today that you didn't have then. The issues often then were driven by social and issues and by what people thought and believed. Now it's about corporate money. So what's going on? The NRA gets like 20 or 30% of their money from members and 70% from these major, you know, Federal and Browning and these major corporations
gun manufacturers.
Right. So now what you've got introduced, not to mention the fact that you have people, all these rich people who have, you know, and all these wealthy corporations who are intermingled, and they have stocks in these various businesses, and a lot of people have a lot of money to lose. The corporations own the media. The corporations have so much power now that you're not fighting oftentimes social issues or apathy. What you're fighting is huge corporations with huge amounts of money with a PR department that, you know, that pretty much own the media.
You're exactly right, and I suggest we take this show for our own security to Costa Rica, a more civilized country, and broadcast by satellite and straighten America out.
And I want to encourage people.
What's the country that legalized marijuana?
Uruguay.
Yeah, there we go. That's where we go.
Yeah,
everybody's
okay.
Smoking weed, buddy. There ain't gonna be a whole lot of war going on there.
I don't know about
They'll be selling a lot of nachos and Doritos at the local 7-Eleven. You try to grab somebody's nachos, you might get yourself killed.
That's true. But they won't have the guns to do it.
Speaking of where we began, I mean, I don't watch a lot of news because it only makes me sick. Then I have to vomit, you know, and everything. Then I have to eat more food, and you know, it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, bulimia. You can lose weight. I thought no.
Yeah,
okay.
You can. But you know, I haven't seen or heard really much respectful coverage of Newtown.
You really haven't, and you know, this really is an attack on the press, because now that I really hadn't even thought about the fact that there wasn't even a debate over whether to show these images. The idea was, well, obviously it's gruesome and horrible to see dying children and dead, of course it is. Of course it's gruesome and horrible, but the crime was gruesome and horrible. They could warn people. They could tell people, you know, go away from your TV set. But it is not only news, but it's the kind of news, it's the kind of image that can really make a difference. And it's shocking and horrible to see the pictures we saw from Vietnam or from Abu Ghraib or from the civil rights movement. And yet imagine if the news media had said, you know what? In Selma, Alabama, it's horrible that they sprayed these children, and we're not going to show it because, I mean, you know, torturing children is a horrible thing, and we're not going to show the American public. They didn't do that in the 1960s, and to think that we're more squeamish today than we were in the 1960s is a fascinating point that I don't think anybody's really made very much.
We're not squeamish, and Garland is right on that. The difference is the money now controls the media, and the money, those news agencies.
But there's so much independent media. That you pointed out. Why can't, is it that no one could get into that school? That the police wouldn't allow anyone?
That's the other thing, nobody's going to get their hands on those pictures. You know,
they must exist.
Law enforcement. Nobody.
I guarantee law enforcement has those pictures. Someone's got those pictures.
But, well, I'll put it like this. No, come to think of it, actually, through FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, they could probably.
I think so.
They could.
I think they should.
But you're not going to, you know, nobody's going to make the decision. Here's the thing about it. If you're an editor, if you're someone
at people are going to
agency,
criticize you big time.
Right. And you make that decision, it could be the end of your career, and people don't want to take that kind of a risk in a position. I mean, you may never work in the news industry again if you're the one who makes that decision. You could either be the person that everybody says, this guy changed the world. You could be the goat, or you could be the guy who changed the world that was a goat anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and the news agencies back then, the three major networks, you know, had just a whole lot more independence than they have today.
Okay, we got to move.
I have none today, Terry, right. So that isn't hard.
Right.
That's true. We got to move on to another topic. I want to get on to Garland's budget agreement, and then I can't wait to talk about Megyn Kelly and a white Christmas. Yeah, white Santa Claus and a white Jesus. But first, a quick break if you want to call in.
You better not cry.
202-889-9797. We'll be right back with Raucous Caucus right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. I'm making the break short because we got so much to talk about today. Garland, you wanted to discuss the budget agreement that virtually no one's mentioning because they're bored by it. I mean, when Congress gets along, it's not very interesting, is it?
Well, and I want to make this, I'm going to just, let's do about 5 minutes because I do want to talk about the race of Jesus. That's very, and Santa Claus, and particularly Santa Claus. That's what's
good. We're going to get there. Finish your budget agreement, then we'll move on to my topic.
You know, two things. I think it's sad that, as I said, Chris Rock did a comedy bit a while back where he said, you know, people shouldn't stick their chest out and ask for recognition for things they're supposed to do. Number one, it's sad when the Congress is saying, hey, look what we did. We got a budget agreement. It's working. First of all, you're supposed to get a budget agreement. Second of all, the budget agreement is so bad, it widens the inequality gap and it leaves the poor holding the bag.
That's the American dream.
Yeah, it's horrible. Number two, here's what it appears to me. It's like if Mark's car is not working, and Mark says, I have an idea, I'll take it to a mechanic. And I say, I have an idea, Terry and I will, we'll do a rain dance around it and fix it. And you say, well, let's meet somewhere in the middle. No! One of the ideas is absurd. You have to cast aside the absurd ideas. So what I'm saying is, when on one side you have one group saying, what we need to do is we need to, you know, help the poor and we need to not cut spending because that hurts the economy. And the other side says, we need to cut, austerity will work, even though we know it won't. And they meet in the middle. How in the heck do you meet in the middle when one of the ideas is absurd? But that's where we are now. We have to always meet in the middle, and guess who gets crushed in the middle, Terry?
Yeah, the kids.
Well, they say the only people in the middle of the road are the yellow lines and dead armadillos.
Yeah. That would be us. We're dead armadillos.
Maybe we're dead armadillos. I mean,
you know, we are
Terry's a possum, a dead possum, and I'm a dead squirrel.
Watch it. One of my weird teachers in high school used to have nicknames for us, and she called me possum. So just watch it. She was a
there you go.
Teacher.
And I could feel that, Terry. That came through.
Just watch it. You know,
if
this gets out on the air, you guys
possum
are in
is emanating from you, and that's why I chose possums.
Here's the thing about the budget deal, though. I'm struggling to find a ray of light, but I think that the Republicans, at least for a couple years, I think they understood that when you shut down the government, you think they would have learned this in 1996 when they did it under Newt Gingrich. But okay, they forgot the lessons, 17 years later, that shutting down the government is not something that Americans want you to do. And, you know, the fact that this alone, totally apart from the budget, the fact that they are not going to shut down the government until October 2015, I gotta say, that's a success. I'll take it. One cheer, not three cheers, one cheer for not shutting down the U.S. government.
I'll just insert one little piece of political reality to you guys. Here's my prediction. Because of the way that the Senate changed the laws regarding filibuster, President Obama will never, never be able to get a Supreme Court nominee into the Supreme Court. Not in his term.
Well, they may have to change the laws again on filibuster for that.
Yeah.
Because he'll get 50 votes. He just might not get 60.
Yeah, that's right.
So they'll just have to change
it
on that.
Prediction there. We can put money on it if you want to, Mark.
What?
Well, here's the thing about
a Supreme Court nominee?
Here's the, Terry, the thing about it, Terry. That's an easy bet. He couldn't get an assistant to the assistant in the Department of Garbage through.
No, but he is.
So God knows.
No, Garland.
The district court guys in there.
Because they changed the rules, he is getting them through. In fact, the Republicans threatened to do a talking filibuster. This was hilarious. They threatened to go all night, do the old-fashioned talking filibuster, and keep the Senate closed for 4 days. And then, like about 1 a.m., no Republicans showed up, and that was the end of the talking filibuster.
Maybe that's a encouraging sign. Maybe if no Republicans show up, we'll make some progress.
It is past their bedtime at 1 a.m., you know. There are a bunch of very elderly people.
The only reason the Republicans did anything with a budget deal is to save their own hides, number one. And number two, I don't understand, if I'm a Democrat, if I'm the president, if I'm Harry Reid, and the Republicans say, I don't want to shut the budget down, the government down, because I know it'll hurt me. I'm going to give them a deal so bad that they have to shut it down. And then at the last minute, I'm going to back off, and give them just enough that they can get away with it, and that they walk away saying, oh my God, we had a horrible deal, but we couldn't shut the government down, so we had to give it. We got nothing. We could have taken them to the cleaners, and instead, they're walking away with a smile on their face.
That's look.
The government really needs a separate advisory committee made up of you, of Garland, Mark, and me.
Uh-huh.
We should be sitting in the Capitol at all times, giving out these instructions, at least to the Democrats.
But we would disagree as well. So, you know, I don't know that.
Have we disagreed yet?
Today, that is rare. Again, it must be the special holiday spirit. I'm not sure.
You're getting older and you're maturing.
That has to be what it is.
I sure hope not. I'm definitely opposed to that. Let's move on. I want to get to my third topic, which is my favorite. Because I don't think there's much to talk about with the budget agreement. I just think it's like, it happened. It's
unless you're unemployed, then there's a whole lot to talk about.
Yeah, unless you're a kid.
Well, that's true. Although,
where are you going to get your next meal from? Things like that. You know, minor things.
Well, but there are still parts of it that could come up in the next Congress. I mean, with the food stamps and other things that have yet to be done. I mean, this is absolutely the minimum they could do in a Congress that, by the way, has broken all the records. There has never been a more do-nothingest Congress than the Congress of 2013. No Congress has done less than 1 year in all of American history.
Yeah.
So, Guinness.
Which is precisely so the Tea Party people are celebrating, because they want to stop the government dead. They don't want the government to do anything. So
they don't want government.
You're right.
Well, that's a fair point. All right, let's take another
theocracy.
I'll take another quick break. I can't wait to get to Megyn Kelly and her special way of looking at
assertion of Santa Claus being white.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna play it for you on the air when we come back right after this. So on Fox News, as they do every year, they talk about, I guess, the war on Christmas. They mentioned a really interesting article that I enjoyed the article in Salon by Aisha Harris, who points out the trouble that many black kids have with a white Santa. We all know the image of the white Santa, that Santa, and he's big and he's fat and he wears red and white, which I think started a Coca-Cola ad. I think that's where the whole red
was the first artist that did it, but then Coca-Cola took over.
Did Nass do the red and white outfit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I wasn't sure about that. All right, fair enough. But anyway, old fat white dude with you know, rosy cheeks, etc. Aisha Harris writes, you know, this can be troubling for black kids in the same way that you know, the great experiments of Brown versus Board of Education. They talked about black kids in the 1950s actually choosing white dolls over black dolls, little girls. So before the, you know, you'd think they'd be inculcated with the culture. And she points out that since Santa is a mythical character anyway, and we'll talk, I'm sure, in the next 25 minutes about where Santa Claus came from, because
he isn't. He's real, Mark.
Well,
we're on the air.
Sorry, all you 6-year-olds out there. Well, I mean, he is real in the sense that he's based on the Dutch concept of Sinterklaas, which comes from Saint Nicholas, who was a Greek man living in what today is called Turkey, in the 3rd century, who looked nothing like Thomas Nass' image.
No,
he was a dark-skinned man, not black, not white, brown-skinned. I guess would be the or olive-skinned, and at least according to the pictures of him at the time, like most people in that region. Anyway. Let me play for you what Megyn Kelly had to say. Oh, let me just finish. So Aisha Harris wrote this article that said that maybe the best answer is to make Santa neither black nor white, but a penguin. I kind of liked her answer. You know, we like the Easter Bunny. A penguin can't, she said, we'll have to move it from the North Pole to the South Pole just to be, you know, consistent. But a penguin, a magic penguin wearing a red outfit, can give toys to everyone, and everyone can love a penguin. Penguins don't discriminate among races. Every child can love a penguin, and she's all for promoting Penguin Santa. I liked the article. I thought it was a little tongue-in-cheek, obviously, but also brought up real issues of racism and how, you know, myths actually harm children, but at the same time brought up a nice whimsical solution that I, you know, as a Jewish kid, I have no problem with Penguin Santa. I actually think it's kind of cute.
Plus, Mark, penguins taste great and they're less filling.
One thing I got to observe, because you just explained something to me, believe it or not, in my neighborhood where the Christmas decorations are, not in my neighborhood, but a little ways away, they have, you know, this Santa thing out front, you know, a blow-up balloon Santa. There is this house that has a 6-foot penguin.
Yes!
And I was wondering, what the heck is that about?
Is that new?
No.
It may be in response to Aisha Harris's article in Salon.
Well, that explains. I'm going to leave mackerel by my fireplace instead of milking.
There you go. You should. So anyway, Megyn Kelly on Fox News had her own take on Aisha Harris's article, and I'm going to play it for you right now.
In Slate, they have a piece on .com, Santa Claus should not be a white man anymore. And when I saw this headline, I kind of laughed, and I said, oh, this is so ridiculous. Yet another person claiming it's racist to have a white Santa, you know? And by the way, for all you kids watching at home, Santa just is white, but this person is just arguing that maybe we should also have a black Santa. But, you know, Santa is what he is, and just so you know, we're just debating this because someone wrote about it, kids. Okay, I wanted to get that straight. But Jedediah, when I read the piece, the author seems to have, you know, she's African American, and she seems to have real pain at having grown up with this image of a white Santa, and she speaks about it kind of honestly, saying, I didn't really understand why that had to be. I realize that the piece by Harris, which went on to argue that Santa should be a penguin, was also tongue-in-cheek. That's in part why we covered the story in the first place.
Okay, this is her apologizing for it later. She went on to say, by the way, in the same piece, the same original piece, that Jesus, by the way, was also white.
Proving that ignorance never stops anybody from getting on TV.
You know, which to me, my thought was, if you're Christian, and I'm not Christian, but if you're Christian and you believe Jesus was God, then race really would have nothing whatsoever to do with it. And if you do believe in the historical Jesus, which I do believe that Jesus was a man who existed and lived in Judea in about 2,000 years ago, you would think that he was probably olive-skinned like most Jews of that time and period, and therefore... you know, I don't know whether that's black or white, but it certainly ain't blonde hair and blue eyes as much as it also isn't, dark African. So take it away, gentlemen. Who wants to start?
Let me start by saying that two things. Number one, Jesus could have been born in Ghana, and the people on Fox News would have claimed that he was white.
Yeah.
And the reason is this. If you look at it, you know, this has nothing to do with the mythical Santa or Jesus. What Megyn Kelly really is talking about is Megyn Kelly. When people say things like that, what's going on is this. It's important to her and to people who want to take that position. What they're really saying is, it's important to me that we have these views of mythical and or real or religious figures, that we maintain views of them as a certain race, because I don't feel good about this or myself unless we promote these views. It's ridiculous and it's unimportant. But to them, to people like Megyn Kelly and to the, you know, the right wingers and people who feel like that, what they're really saying is that it's important to them that we maintain this image.
I think that's exactly right. And it's really sad. And if you've been just keeping up on some of the latest science and some of the latest books affirming what we've already known, but they really, really, there is nothing genetically, DNA-wise or other, that we can really find that has anything to do with race. In terms of science, race doesn't
exist.
Yeah, it's a social construct. And it's a particularly nefarious social construct, because I have no problem dividing up peoples, as it were, based on choices they make. We can divide up people based on religions they choose. We can divide them up based on languages they speak, on nationalities. People are of different countries. We can talk about cultures. I'm not trying to say ethnicity doesn't exist. Ethnicity very much exists. There are definitely different cultures among different populations. But the difference about culture and nationality and language and forgot the other one example. Like, oh, religion. Is these are all things that people can choose. Yeah, you're often born into it, but you can leave your religion, your nationality, your language, and your culture, and adopt a new one. So these are based on ways that human beings voluntarily order their societies. The reason why I would argue race is the most nefarious construct is, first of all, it's arbitrary. It does have a genetic basis, but so does height. So do whether we have detached earlobes. We could argue that left-handed people are this entire left-handed race, and they belong to the race of the left-handers. And
my older brother is left-handed. I think you're right.
Well, you know, I have to say is left is not right by definition. It's just not right.
Mark, Terry has a left-hander in his family. Don't we have to say he has impure DNA?
Yes, I'm one quarter left-handed.
I think you're a Southpaw lover. I think you're a closet Southpaw lover.
One drop of left-handed blood.
That's true. The point is, there's all kinds of genetic differences among human beings, and the fact that society has, unfortunately for millennia, has decided that skin color matters, but left-handedness and earlobe detachedness and height and eye color, other things don't matter, is absolutely arbitrary. That being said, that arbitrariness led to real differences in culture and ethnicity and laws and mistreatment and persecution, so that race does matter today, not because it should, but because it historically does.
Somehow we got to get honest with, you know, who we are as human beings. And the most seductive thing for human beings is power. You know, and that's really what drives all of it. People want power. No matter what level you're at, you still want more power than the guy next to you. And so therefore, if you can find anything that you think might show up as being inferior or not as good as you or not as smart or not as strong or whatever, you're going to use that to advance your own position. And we've got a society now that's run amok with that idea. It's always been slightly amok. Well, no, it's always been totally amok. It's about power. It's not about race. It's not even about ethnicity. It's simply about power. I want power over you, so therefore I'm going to make you the other.
Let me throw this in. And I'll go back to Dr. Seuss. To me, Santa Claus is the equivalent of a Dr. Seuss character. And if you look at Dr. Seuss, who was a Jewish person who suffered a lot of persecution in Europe. His characters were blue and red and green.
Yeah.
They were various kinds.
They were never white, yellow, black, or red.
Yes, that's right. It wasn't something where you could say this race or that race. He didn't even get into that. He just made various creatures who were cute and funny and witty, and then he made the point of what he was saying. And I think that if Santa Claus is blue, you know, it's like me going to Beijing and a Chinese guy arguing to me that Santa is Chinese. Why not make him blue?
You know, one of my favorite Dr. Seuss's was the one where some people had one star on their chest and some had zero stars on their chest. Right. Remember, there was this whole discrimination, and then somebody planted where they could put stars on their chest, and somebody put two stars on their chest. And to me, that's racism right there. It's the arbitrariness and the silliness of it all.
It's important to realize, I mean, you brought it up. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, you know. One of the differences, and I'm not trying to evangelize here at all, but you brought it up.
Like you
one of the things
do.
That's really significant about the history of Jesus Christ is he threw all that out the window. I mean, he gave up and all that. He said, you can't separate people this way. You just can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, every other religion has forgotten that entirely and wants a little nice white Christ, which is absolute nonsense. It has nothing to do with what he preached or practiced.
Well, first of all, you can go down to Christian churches in Africa, and you will find black Jesuses. There are Christian churches in Asia with Asian Jesuses. The whole point of God is that, in fact, to plug my religion a little bit, in Judaism, you're not allowed to make an image of God. That's actually against the religion.
Yes.
That's why you go to a synagogue, you will never see images of God. That's the idols that, according to our law, Abraham destroyed all the idols because the whole idea of God is you're not supposed to make God into any human image, because what does that do? If you make God into a man, that excludes women. If you make God into a certain race, that excludes another race. The whole idea of making a universal God for all mankind, and the reason why images are forbidden in Judaism is precisely because they become exclusionary.
And one thing that's important about this discussion is
Go ahead, Gon.
Very quickly, there was a famous Jewish painter in Germany during the Baroque period
who painted like the Last Supper, and everybody looked kind of, you know, had kind of that Semitic kind of look to him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they did everything but threw the guy. He had to repaint it. He had to go back. He had to make him look nice and white and German. I mean, the guy's life was on the line.
Yeah.
Because, and which shows when you look at a bunch of German people saying, Jesus has to look like us. That shows you exactly the kind of mentality that Megyn Kelly has about the Jesus, about the what it's all really about.
So let's go back to Megyn Kelly. What was she thinking when she said, and just so you know, kids, Jesus is white? Why did she have to say that? Why couldn't she deal with Aisha Harris's piece, deal with it in terms of, she could talk about the historic Jesus and the historic Santa Claus. She could talk about, you know, the Thomas Nast, where he was white, and the Dutch myth, where he was white, all the way back to St. Nicholas, where he was, you know, Greek and Turkish and all, and give the real history. Why would she, I mean, Megyn Kelly's a smart person.
You know, and thank God you and I and Mark, I mean, we're all safe from this. But there is an axiomatic, there is a law, that the more time you spend on air, the stupider you are.
You know, is that the reason?
Rush Limbaugh proves this beyond a shadow of doubt.
I just think Megyn Kelly is smarter than that.
You know what, you're right. She's smarter than that. What does that mean? When a person who is fairly intelligent does something that seems stupid, then what that means is it's not a product of their intellect. It's emotional. It didn't come from the intellectual side of the brain. It came from the emotional side of the brain. The intellectual side of the brain would have reasoned out that this is stupid. But the emotional works off the subconscious. So what was
lack
she doing?
Lack of sagacity.
That's it. Well, that's it, Terry. She has no sagacity. And
no
without
sagacity,
I mean, where are you? What, life isn't worth living.
We have a caller on the line. I suspect it's Michael from the Bronx because he very faithfully calls in every Sunday. Michael, is that you?
Oh, and it's important that Michael is white. I don't care what color he is. He has to be white.
He's not, though. Michael, are you there? Who's our caller?
Sorry, I can't. We have no room for that. He still has to be white.
Hang on. Who's our caller on the line?
It's me, Michael, as you said.
Oh, okay. I thought so.
Is this white Michael?
This is black Michael. Michael, did you see Megyn Kelly's comments?
Oh, God, I'm so glad you asked me.
Yeah?
Because the thing is that I want to go to her garbage claim of us progressives engaging in race baiting. All right? The thing is that...
Yeah, this was her idea.
It's her idea for who's the one that was saying Santa Claus is white and Jesus is white. It was her. She was the one that started. Now, the thing that really gets me upset is, well, two things that get me upset. Number one, I'm not going to go into Jesus being white or black because, you know, it's a faith thing and he lives in all of us. But how dare she make a statement regarding Santa Claus, and you have children who believe in Santa Claus in a particular age range who are way too young to know or even understand anything about ethnicity or the dynamics within it.
Yeah. So little kids know nothing about race. I mean, really, I mean, you got to teach race.
We are. They're much smarter than we are.
You have to teach prejudice. You have to even teach racial awareness. I mean, two, three, four-year-olds, they'll play with each other and
my thing is, come on. If anybody else from the progressive side said something outrageous, knowing that children can get a hold of it, you know, we'd be blasted north, south, east, and west by these conservatives. And I got to make a connection here, gentlemen, with Megyn Kelly, Sarah Palin, and Martha Beshear. All right? Here's Sarah Palin making a racially offensive remark regarding slavery a few weeks back.
Yeah, she said that the national debt was equivalent to slavery, which is really that does not quite to deal with the horrors of slavery to make an understatement.
So she cannot find a metaphor, you know.
But here's where I'm going with this, gentlemen. I'm trying to go as fast as I can.
Okay.
All right.
But she was fired for saying that, basically talking about a slave an evil slave master should do the same to Sarah Palin that he did to his slaves or something like that.
Yeah.
And Martha, he got fired.
Martha Beshear gets ousted. But once again, Miss Palin, the self-proclaimed pitbull with lipstick, doesn't get held accountable. And then now, only a few weeks later, you have Megyn Kelly making racially insensitive statements that would even affect children, that affect the religious regarding Jesus, that definitely affect the children. My main concern is about the children who look so much forward to seeing and hearing of Santa Claus. The only thing they know is that Santa Claus comes down the chimney. They don't care about the race or anything.
No, but I'll tell you something.
How many children are watching Fox News? Please help me. If they are, we're doomed.
Close
the country. Just close it down.
Well, but they should. But let me address Michael's point about the fact that Martin Bashir was fired for what he said about Sarah Palin and Megyn Kelly still in the air. Do you think that's inconsistent? Who wants to start?
Murdoch, are you kidding? You're talking about Murdoch here. Come on, guys.
You get a bonus for that stuff at Fox. You know, the other thing is this. Can you imagine if somebody on MSNBC said, look, kids, everybody knows that Jesus and Santa Claus are black.
Right.
Or Jesus and Santa Claus are gay. Or Jesus and whatever.
Right, right, so, right.
The people on Fox, they would have spontaneously combusted. There wouldn't be anybody anymore. They'd all turn into ash.
But one of the things, guys, that we're pointing out throughout this entire show, going all the way back to the very beginning of the show, we're pointing out how important culture really is. And you cannot separate culture from politics. But culture is a driving force. And therefore, in terms of guns or whatever, racism or whatever, how we deal with that, whether it's you and me on the air or whatever, how we deal with it culturally is going to have as much or bigger an impact as how it's dealt with politically.
Brilliant commentary.
I'm sorry. I want everyone to remember one important thing, and that is wherever you go, all right, in a household, a conservative household, the parents could have on Fox News and in the presence of children. At times when they go out to a particular place and they got television on, how many of these public places have Fox News on? Come on. You are in a public airways. You know full well that anything and everything you say, it could be heard by man, woman, or even child.
Okay. All right, fair enough, Michael, and thank you for your call. I always appreciate when you do call.
Happy
holidays.
Can I piggyback on something Terry said? Because I thought it was a brilliant comment, and that is, yes, a lot of this is about culture. What we have now is we have a big battle going on with those who believe in the melting pot, which you have to come to America. In America, you have to abandon your culture and accept the mainstream culture. And people who believe in a mosaic that says people can come to America, they can maintain whatever culture they want to, and everybody can still be a part of this. So Megyn Kelly is basically saying, you have to abandon all of that stuff and say, Santa Claus is white, every major figure is white, these are the way things are, I don't care what your culture is, I don't care what you think, you have to accept these certain pillars and tenets of our society, our mainstream society, and then you're acceptable.
You know what, I want to thank Megyn Kelly, because she put her foot in her mouth, she actually helped to highlight Aisha Harris's article and made me think about the fact that we need to have cartoons, Christmas, we need to have at least one Christmas special with a Black Santa. We absolutely do. Or a penguin Santa, for that matter.
Blue Santa. I like Dr.
Santa. Well, okay, blue. All right. I'm all for blue Santa.
Blue Santa, penguin.
You know, then Santa could be red, white, and blue because of his outfit. And that would be making very patriotic and American.
But you got to face the reality, guys. I hate to tell you this. This is really going to hurt you all, and I'm pretty sad. But Megyn Kelly is better looking than you or me or Garland.
Well, yeah. I'm a little hurt, but I'll get over it.
You know. That's cultural, sex.
And therefore she has more power.
But then again,
Terry, you are a looksist.
But then again,
left-handed looksist. A left-handed lover, a left-handed loving looksist. I like that alliteration.
But then again, Terry, an actual possum is better looking than you and Mark and I. It's not a long way up to get better looking than the three of us.
Yeah, how ironic is it that every culture wants to appropriate Jesus? Germans want to appropriate Jesus in blonde and white, and people in Ghana want to appropriate Jesus. People in China want to appropriate. The only people who don't want to appropriate Jesus are the Jews from which Jesus came. So, we're the only ones who don't want him, and he came from us. The irony is just
the irony is overwhelming.
It really is.
And it's always he's white, he's black, he's this. Nobody ever says, well, he was actually Jewish.
He was.
He existed. He was Jewish.
Right.
He probably looked like Jewish people.
Right. And like I said, and we rejected him, which is why a lot of people hate us. But anyway, not that he existed. I never dispute the historicity of the individual Jesus. I dispute his divinity. But the heart of it, though, is particularly when you're talking about the divine. That's the time you should least be talking about race. And to the extent that, Santa Claus is a divine-like figure, he's a mythical figure, it's really, I mean, the Easter Bunny is a great one. The Easter Bunny could be male or female. The Easter Bunny is an animal. The Easter Bunny, you know, I mean, if you're gonna, I like Aisha Harris's idea. Let's use animals.
Let's face it. I mean, but you know, guys, I hate to break an illusion here, you know, but the religious thing, you know, doesn't even really matter today. It's about marketing. Let's face that. It's about money. That's all it's become. You know, they've even now, in case you aren't aware, you know, Black Friday isn't enough for the American consumer. Now they're going to have all the stores are opening up on Thanksgiving as well.
Right.
So you can go to that. You know, and it's now also they are all marketing. A new marketing term, which you may be aware of, is self-rewarding. And that when you go to the shop for Christmas, you should be self-rewarding so you can buy yourself
of course
as much stuff as you possibly want. The hell with your neighbors or your friends or your relatives, you know.
Well, let's end this episode then, since we're approaching Christmas and the holiday season and gift-giving and religion. I want to talk in the last couple minutes we have about Pope Francis and the fact that he went public and decried materialism and capitalism and the free market. Some would say that he's, you know, the leader of the world's Catholics and a preeminent Christian, but for all those that said that Christmas is really about shopping, he must have really harmed their holiday.
Well, I've had Marxists that he was called by people who have actually never read Marx.
Yeah. I got to give this Pope credit. I mean, in the heart of the holiday season, he's actually talking about the themes of Christianity and Christmas that have nothing to do with materialism and free market. And
I don't believe in putting anybody on a pedestal. Respect, yes. On a pedestal, no. But Pope Francis is one of those leaders who can make and is making a cultural shift.
I mean,
he has been so profound and so to the point on so many issues in the short time that he's been.
Yeah, less than a year.
Catholics, at the very least, they can, you know, dismiss him entirely, or they really have to start thinking about these things, and the rest of the world does pay attention to what he says, and this man is a leader and a leader with heart.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you know, I feel, you know, the last Pope kind of freaked me out a little bit. I mean,
yeah,
he was an ex-Nazi, and, you know, that just gave me the creeps.
I was not a big fan of Benedict. No, I have to agree.
You know, but this guy, they've got a true left-leaning guy, and I am so happy and thrilled. And I want to read the full 84-page, or whatever it is, manifesto, because, I mean, based on the excerpts that I've seen, this is real quality left-wing, pro-people work.
But it's more than that. He puts his actions where his mouth is. I mean, this is the guy who goes and washes the feet of Muslim women who are criminals, right? I mean, talk about three people who would be, three aspects of people that would, all of them be, against, what many would think. I mean, this is the guy.
He rides around a Ford Focus.
That's right. And he hugs, disfigured people, and he actually sneaks rides on the bus and goes through Rome and takes care of poor people, which is,
What he is doing, whether you think it's myth or divine, doesn't really matter. But what he is doing is exactly what Jesus Christ.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's what matters.
Of any church, of any leaders of any church is doing that.
And doing good works. Whether you're Christian or Jewish or Hindu or Muslim or Buddhist or atheist, doing good works is what is, as far as I'm concerned, to be praised from this Pope, from Jesus, from any historic figure. And that matters infinitely more than what someone looks like or whether someone is white or black or whatever.
I like blue.
All right. Blue Jesus. Then Jesus, I could see Jesus singing the blues. But that's,
I have no doubt.
he's got a lot to cry about.
Yeah, he needs a heaven B3, but I'm sure he's got one.
That'd be good. That would be good to YouTube, right? Blue Jesus singing the blues.
Yeah, remember, what was it? Horton hears a who? A person's a person, no matter how small or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well,
no matter how blue, a person's a person.
No matter how blue. Well, I think we've all agreed that Dr. Seuss has more profundity than Megyn Kelly.
yes.
And on that, I want to wish you gentlemen a very happy holidays. Merry Christmas. We still got a few shows. Okay, I guess just one more, before the holiday season. But I want to wish everyone in the We Act Radio audience, AM 1480, and everyone at home, a Merry Christmas, a Happy Holidays, a Happy Kwanzaa, a Happy New Year, just a wonderful winter time of year. So with that, gentlemen, thank you very much. We will be back with the Raucous Caucus every Sunday, noon to 1. Do not miss it. Thank you, Garland Nixon. Thank you, Terry P. Kester.
All right.
You.